gets it back into the draw. Hey, good morning, everyone, on this gorgeous Sunday morning. We are Flyer and Ice. We are brought to you by the Heat Ratio Sports Network. As always, please check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, tap the bell. You'll know when we go live. Check us out on your ride home from work on Apple, Spotify, and all podcasting platforms. And with me, as always, on these Sunday waking up with the Flyers that we can review is Nick Descaltosti. And Zach Kinderchuk of My Dad Used to Play Hockey. Gentlemen, good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, before we get into the big news of the week, 5 games in 1 week, Zach. I mean, my God, no matter if you're a hot team or a struggling team, 5 games in 1 week. Your thoughts on that?
Well, try to bring this up with my dad. My dad used to play hockey. He has no sympathy for them whatsoever.
Okay.
Because they fly in chartered jets. He used to have to take buses. You know, it was before climate change, so it was really cold this time of year. So cold bus, 6 hours, you know, and then have to then pack up, get back on the bus, and go to another city. But yeah, it wears on you. But everybody has a stretch like this. Like, I still feel bad for the Islanders, who just never really got their season started because they had to play so many games on the road. At least they had a bit of a stretch at home, which is always nice. But this was the toughest. This was going to be the toughest month of the season. And things lighten up a little bit here. I'm not going to say they got through it, but time passed. So it's over with now. And they did. They played a few teams during that stretch that were also going through similar stretches in their own schedule with back-to-backs and everything like that. So it's something that every team has to experience. I'm never going to blame scheduling for a lack of effort, and I'm certainly not going to do it for a couple of games where the Flyers didn't show up in the past week.
No, I agree. And Nick, my only point of bringing this up was when you're struggling, it's like really no practice time when you have 5 games in a week.
Yeah, I it was the tale of you know, two different, a week, but split
two
into
halves,
two different dynamics, you know, and it was just coming out of awful, awful losses. Really, just probably the worst we've seen in a while, leading up to that Devils loss. And then, you know, finding some life, hopefully, you know, whether that's come through getting through to them now and the practice, you know, the practices that they did have, especially on the power play, which is really what's brought them to life, and the goaltending. I mean, you know, we still have a long way to go, but they look in the first half of the week, they were low, their heads were down. They were just not enjoying, you know, being out there and doing what they do. And I kind of felt like, you know, leading up to last night and into the game last night, they looked like they were having a little more fun with everything. So, you know, I'm sure that's really important, you know, for your psyche when you're trying to come out of a losing streak like this. But it's crazy. I mean, you just don't know what to expect with this team. And but we got what we expected this past week with, you know, getting clobbered by some really good teams and then beating the teams you're supposed to beat.
I think there's something to be said too, that when you stink it up on the ice, you want to get back out there as quickly as possible.
Right.
Yeah. You would hope that's the mindset. I agree with that. And some of the points that you both touched on, we are clearly going to address later. So our first question, your thoughts on the firing of Vigneault and Therrien, but keeping Yeo as interim, and your gut feeling on if Yeo is long term. I'll start with you, Zach.
Well, obviously Vigneault had to go. I've been saying that for quite a while. Just inside reports from the locker room is that he just never formulated a connection with the players. And I know he's got a good track record, as did Terry, and they're both previous winners of the Jack Adams Award. Like, they've had success, but clearly there was a disconnect between him and the players, and the power play has been indefensible now for years, seemingly. So if Vigneault had to go, obviously Therrien is going to go. They seemed connected at the hip, almost like one in the same. It didn't surprise me that they kept Yo, because what else are you going to do? The being that his primary responsibility was the penalty kill, which is an outstanding, but wasn't really a point of contention, I think, for anybody following this team this year or last year, really. Yo's got previous head coach experience. I think Fletcher, what I've heard is that Tortorella is the top choice, and of all the brass except for Fletcher.
Right. So I think I must have read that from you on Twitter. Yes,
that's what I've heard.
I'm torn. I'm really torn on that.
I'm open to it, but I think that Fletcher wants to give Yo a chance. And you know, Yo's not sexy the way that I guess Tortorella or certainly bringing back an ex-Flyer and Tockett would be. But if they start picking it up a little bit, I think Fletcher truly is interim with the hopes of making him the permanent. And if he has success, if he earns his spot, why get rid of him? I think is kind of Fletcher's mindset right now. I don't think he's going to make a big splashy signing if they start playing better, if they start getting back into it. I don't know what his definition of better is, and I don't know what he'll be satisfied with. But I think that Fletcher could hang on to Yo. I could certainly see that. And if it's performance-based, we're all going to be excited that Yo is kept around if they keep playing the way that they played the last couple of games. So I'm okay with him there in the meet right now. And, you know, you just give him a tryout. That's basically, he's a walk-on right now, kind of got that feeling. And if he does all right, we'll stick with him.
Yeah, my hunch is he's a long-term, especially, like you said, if they have streaks of winning without long interim losing streaks, I think he's going to stay. And let's be honest, Mike Yo has a decent resume. He coached well with Minnesota and St. Louis, never went deep into playoffs with them. It just so happened he was replaced by Berube, and we know what happened in St. Louis with Berube. Mm-hmm. But he's a very competent, accomplished coach other than going deep into playoffs. His team's always had nice regular season records. But God forbid we go on one of these crazy losing streaks, and it's inevitable. Okay, even Yo's voice isn't working. The two sexy names left are Tockett and Tortorella. We've already hinted about Tortorella. He's a slash and burn coach. He doesn't last long. And that's why I don't necessarily want him. Because if he's going to eventually burn everyone out, we got so many young players coming up. Can you have a guy that's going to be so short term? Tockett, the sexy ex-Flyer, really didn't have a good coaching record over the years.
Man, I think that's
it's got to count for something.
He was in Tampa Bay during the rebuilding years. So I know that he struggled there a bit. And then I'm finding it difficult to trash him during his time at Arizona as well. He got them into the second round of the playoffs. I know it was a different team. It's a smaller resume than Yo or Therrien or Vigneault for sure. I think he's only got 5 total years of head coaching experience. But this feels, the reason that I would be high on him, and I know that it's a lazy, for in some people's minds, it's not a good enough justification. I was listening to somebody yesterday talk about this. You can't just bring him back because he's a fan favorite. Correct. And I agree with that. There's got to be other factors involved. But I do think that can be one of the factors. And I think that if you bring him back in a proper context where Tockett's here, we're looking to restore the culture that all of us are clamoring for, that those Ed Snyder ferocious Flyers teams, and Rick Tockett certainly was one of them. And I think that gives a guy like him a longer leash to struggle in the beginning. And also, I think Rick Tockett feels like he's got some unfinished business here in Philadelphia. And I like the idea of him behind the bench, certainly more than Tortorella. But again, this is all only going to happen if Mike Yo fails. So we'd have to be rooting for this Flyers team to sort of tank for either of these options really to be put into place.
That's true. And Nick, part of my concern with Tockett, and last year I think we were all trumpeting Rick Tockett. We said if there was a slow start, Rick Tockett's out there. I recall us saying that. He's my all-time favorite Flyer. And when you get hired, you get fired. And I don't want my all-time favorite Flyer to be disconnected in an anger kind of way from my organization. That's part of the problem. I don't want a legend to fall from grace because he's bitter. And there's also the issue of we always seen the retread Flyer people, and it hasn't worked out. No, but so there's my pros and cons per se, Nick.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. I mean, how long has this fan base been clamoring that, you know, we've got to move on from this one generation of, you know, just recycling Broad Street Bullies and Flyers and things of that nature, and just and expecting a different result. It's been a long time since we've won the cup, and you know, with the Hextalls of the world and everybody we've hired in between, having connections to Ed Snyder, you know, all I hear is, you know, we've got to move on from that and have, you know, some fresh minds behind the bench to help this team move forward. And even, you know, from a GM standpoint with Fletcher, you know, taking over from Hextall. But Dan, to your point about, you know, not wanting to hire Tockett because eventually we're going to, I get that, but do you not buy a dog for the family because eventually it's going to die? You know, it's, I think you got to just enjoy the moment. I think I've never
had a dog.
Me personally, I would like to see, I mean, it, given the options of Tockett and Tortorella, I don't even know if Recchi's name ever comes up. I mean, he's,
I have, you know, the name.
Oh, you do.
I have the name.
So I don't know, you know, you know, that's got to come down to what does the interview like, what's his thought process like, what does he bring to the table from, you know, practice standpoint, from a process standpoint. You know, I think Recchi would be the kind of guy that would gain the respect of the locker room instantly. Mm-hmm. But you know, really at the end of the day, for me, it's going to, how is a coach going to, help evolve these younger players to get better, because we've got, you know, at some point, I think we should do a show on our prospects, because I think we're pretty deep when it comes to talent in the collegiate level and in the junior level right now, and even at Lehigh. So you know, how do we transition over the next couple of years, and who's going to be the coach to do that? I don't think Yo's the guy. You know, from what we saw him do in Minnesota and then again in St. Louis, really just, you know, if it wasn't for Berube bringing that team back and winning the Stanley Cup, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation. But come on, you know, you were in last place, you get fired, and then, you know, a coach that was fired here takes them to the cup and wins it. Mm-hmm. So you know, but you know, to the point of bringing in a guy like Tockett, you know, we could see what Rod's doing down there in Carolina. You know, to me, they were a similar type of player here in Philadelphia. They've got that similar type of mindset.
Yes.
You know, if they could bring that similar type of coaching aspect, if Rick could bring that type of coaching aspect to this team, I would be for Rick Tockett. I am not on the Tortorella bandwagon. I don't know. I mean, he made the comments, you know, I was reading quickly of the Z, you guys all saw the Zegras goal to Sonny Milano, and, yeah. You know, just sick talent there. I mean, that kid is just an absolute stud. But you know, and you see the Tortorella comments, you know, I didn't really hear exactly what he said, but look, there was some negativity towards that kind of flashy play and things like that. And, you know, to how he feels towards younger players and having to, you know, earn their way up into some kind of status in this league. But
they were baffling. Those were some baffling comments. I was trying to follow along with him, and because it's the goal of the year. Potentially,
it's telling. They're telling comments. Yeah,
It's for him to say that this is going to chase away fans. Is I don't follow that logic whatsoever. I'm not going to disregard him as a coach because of those, but that made absolutely no sense to me. And I did want to talk about Tockett's your favorite Flyer, and I didn't know that.
Well, my three in are Tockett, Lindros, and believe it or not, Ben Wilson.
Ben Wilson, interesting, huh?
We have to talk and about fourth would be time. Orris Kinderchuk.
No, of course. Yeah, he's always, he's everybody's fourth. And I think that I understand the point that sometimes with Clark, you brought him back and he stumbled a bit as GM for sure. And if you listen to my interview with Bob Clark, we kind of go through that, how he just was not prepared for the job. And I think has a semblance of regret when it comes to taking it for sure. Holmgren, but is he anybody's? Does the Flyer fan base love him as much as they ever have? They absolutely do, for sure.
You know what, though, can I interrupt you real fast? Yeah. I actually think that's Bob Clark being humble. He took over this team, and his first trade was Darryl Sittler for Murray Craven and Joe Patterson. And his team, he brought up young guys in Zezel, Tockett, Smith. Murray Craven was in the lineup, and they went to two cups in his first 3 years. So I think that's Bobby Clark being humble. He actually did a fine job.
I think mentally he wasn't prepared for it.
Okay.
In the sense that he was a year removed from being on the ice and still being a rather productive player. And had to hand the captaincy over to this 21-year-old kid named, to Dave Poulin. And for him to now have to show up to work in a suit instead of a uniform, he was not mentally prepared to do that. It's hard when you're someone who's always been one of the guys to now have to be the guy that hires and fires the guys. That's really difficult. I think that if we take Ron Hextall out of the equation, who I think destroyed the culture of this team more than any other Flyer. And when I say Flyer, I mean Flyer front office. Obviously, as a player, he completely embodied what it meant to be to wear the Philadelphia Flyers uniform. But he was so infuriatingly arrogant and bad at decision-making that I think that he's really added to all this hesitancy about bringing back an ex-player. Because the last thing that we want is another Ron Hextall experiment.
Well, Holmgren to some extent also.
I think, but Holmgren does.
He's a nice man, of course. He's a nice man, of course. But
and Holmgren always, yes. And not only is he a nice man, he's a Flyer through and through.
Yeah.
And a team cannot thrive without embracing its past and loving its past. And Holmgren understood that. Where Hextall came in and just wanted to eviscerate everything that happened before the day he stepped in as GM, and it was embarrassing. And I know that people are still Hextall fans, but no one's a Hextall fan of him in the front office. People are still going to wear his jerseys, but no one remembers that time fondly. But to your point about comparing Tockett and Brind'Amour, that's why I'm high on Tockett as well, is that I think that there is this slice of NHL players that do turn into excellent head coaches. Gretzky was a disaster. He just doesn't understand. Why don't you just go out there and score 86 goals? just go do that. But you saw Brind'Amour, and Tockett and Brind'Amour had very similar careers in that they really evolved. Think about Tockett's early days. I mean, he was a bruiser. Drop the gloves. That's what I remember him first and foremost for. And a bit of a sex symbol, I'm sure, for a lot of people, him and Zezel. But then he evolved into a star player, like one of the most elite power forwards in the league. And so did Brind'Amour. So they went from one thing and worked themselves into something else. And I think that adds to your value as a coach. When you see a player that is one thing and see that there's ability to turn them into something else, to turn them into something more successful, and understand that they're not going to get there right away. Because, I would never call Brind'Amour or Tockett superstars. They were star players. They were very, very good players. But they also understand what it's like to struggle, what it's like to be underperforming and not, being able to showcase everything that you're able to do. And that's another reason that I'm actually pretty high on Tockett, because I think that parallel between him and Brind'Amour, and let's face it, we'd all kill for Rod Brind'Amour as coach right now. Oh. We wouldn't even be having this discussion if we could bring him in. Watching that Carolina team is pure joy, and that's all him. So yeah, I think that's something to consider with Tockett as well. Is that you just mentioned the prospects that we have. Well, Tockett was one of those young prospects for a while that built himself into a completely different player than any of us, I think, ever expected him to be. And I think he can do that with a lot of the young guys that we do have coming up eventually.
No, those are actually brilliant points. I think I recorded a short video when Vigneault was fired, and I had referenced Torts would be my lean, but I really have been thinking and I'm going a different direction, because I have to go back to the young prospects mentality, and you just can't have revolving coaches. And what you said really struck a chord, because Tockett and Brind'Amour came into this league as 19-year-olds. So if anyone can appreciate the evolution of a player from 19 to 23 to 28, it's those guys and the patience that they probably would have with younger players. Brilliant, brilliant point. But my dark horse,
and that's where the league is going. That's where the league is going now. These young, dynamic players are taking over, and we have a few of them. And you can see almost already the what Frost is. I mean, although he hasn't really produced yet point wise, you could see the skill set and
he's looking better.
What is what you need there to take this team to another level. And if you plug in another couple pieces just like him, maybe even some bigger guys, bring him, Allison is obviously hurt. Farabee is obviously hurt. But you've got hurt down in Lehigh Valley.
Forster.
Forster's hurt down there too. Yes. Mm-hmm. Bobby Brink is another one that could be very dynamic. He's very Frost-like. So we've got some young and the Finn that we drafted, Tamalu. These are young, dynamic, crafty, fast, smart hockey players. And you can't just, this is not we're not talking about 4 or 5 years before we see these kids. Mm-hmm. It's got to be within the next couple of years. I mean, we've got to start shifting them into the lineup here. And if we want, because that's where one of the things that we've seen over this 10-game losing streak is a lack of energy and just a lack of jump. And that doesn't happen with younger players. It just doesn't. And I'm not saying we need to flood this roster with young players, because you still, there's now a little bit of a resurgence with JVR, which is great. Drew is Drew. He's just going to be, he's going to be who he is. And it's one of the most skilled players in the league. So, when you have that combination of younger players and good veterans that are rejuvenated because of that, that's how some of these, that's what's happening with the Rangers right now. It's what's mm-hmm. happening with Carolina right now. It's what, even Tampa Bay, even though they've got some great veterans on that team, some of their younger players are really just kind of contributing to what's happening from an energy standpoint to create, more offensive opportunities. So, that's going to be the future. Hopefully sooner than later, we've got to start seeing some of these young kids start to progress into the lineup.
Yeah, and do you want Tortorella to be the one who's
No,
I don't. Like I said, my mind has swayed away from that. But the guy that I was thinking, whenever you want to look for a GM, whenever you want to look for a head coach, often you want to go to successful organizations, correct? Whenever you want to take someone's assistant scouting director, you want to go to a successful organization, correct? John Cooper's right-hand man is Rob Zettler. Rob Zettler had a cup of coffee with the Flyers. So he was a former Flyer defenseman. He was a very successful coach in their minor league system. And he is Cooper's right-hand man. So if he was to come aboard, hypothetically, he has the credibility of coming from a multiple Stanley Cup championship team, a good culture. And I think that would be a solid hire as well. So just food for thought if you want to go further down the line of outside the box thinking. But let's move on. So the first five games, the first three of the five games we played were disasters. Mm-hmm. We were shellacked 7-1 versus Colorado. Next day, Vigneault was fired. Then without, a chance to breathe, Yo takes over and they get in a shootout 7-5 loss. Well, they were grossly outshot and outplayed, but they put five, the silver lining was they scored five goals. Maybe something's going to happen, right? And then I think the three of us were texting that lifeless 3-0 game against the Devils, where finally Keith Jones just went off of them in postgame. And I'm not ever going to call Keith Jones a company man. He just generally tries to find positives and everything, but he went off on their.
I missed that. I would love to see Keith Jones.
Yeah.
I can't picture it.
Yeah, he did. He was not thrilled at all. So that game summed up everything. And you're like, where do you go from here? Well, we'll talk about those three losses, and then we'll talk about the bounce back games we've just had. So what was your initial? Were you like, oh my God, the snowball is completely going downhill, Zach?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely got there. Just because we've seen it, you don't have to really search, your memory that hard to remember the last time this happened. It hasn't been that long. And it's not something that they've been rebounding from particularly well as of late. So I thought three losses was going to turn into essentially us being in the basement of the Eastern Conference. That's where I thought that we were headed. I don't know if I still don't think that. Like, I think that's certainly still a possibility. I know we're going to get to the positive two games, but it was as angry as I've been as a Flyers fan in a long, long time. And that's saying something, because I start my day as a mildly angry Flyers fan. And it doesn't take much to kind of elevate it to rage. But I was just sitting there seething, And, you know, I think that firing Vigneault was obviously the right call, but is it going to be enough to reinstall or to reinstill kind of a spark in this team? And that game against the Devils was, I think, singularly the most lifeless performance that I can remember seeing. I mean, any team play in the professional league, in the NHL, in any sort of recent memory. And that was, I guess I got so angry because I was just so embarrassed. Because you start looking at other people, other fans of other teams talking about your team. And usually I can come up with a counter argument, but that Wednesday when they were just bashing the Flyers and heaping on our lousy hashtag, bring it to Broad, there was no coming back from it. And that's why I think I got so angry. It's like when you have something, when you're a fan of something that's just so indefensibly terrible, and other teams that you hate, that's in your DNA to just loathe, Rangers fans, Bruins fans, Devils fans. Sorry, did I pluralize that? That's when I got really, really angry, when you just have no comebacks to how bad your team is. And the other thing too, other than the goaltending, there was absolutely no performance in that game that you could at all, no matter how much of a company man you might be, could spin into a positive story for the Flyers.
Well, those three games epitomized what we've been talking about with this team not having an identity. They just, you know, if you see, they're just like racing out of the zone. The breakout is inconsistent. They're not defensive minded. It's all the things that we talked about. You know, at the end of the day, this is a team that's got to work on the defensive zone and then out. And they weren't doing that in those three, and especially going into the Devils game, it was almost like, okay, we're playing the Devils now. Let's get out of the zone. I want to score a goal. And then in the meanwhile, the whole process of breaking out the puck is faltering to hell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what happened in those three games. And you could see it still happened in the games that they won. I mean, they were,
yes,
the amount of saves that, you know, Hart and Jones made. I mean, was it 40 shots in both games, Dan? Over 40 shots?
44 saves were made by Hart. And I will quickly pull up the Arizona
game. The best game he's played. I mean, you could go back the game was just incredible. And the kid is, hopefully what we're seeing out of Carter Hart right now is what we're going to see out of Carter Hart. Yeah. You know, and I think it is, but you know, this is, you know, it's going back to figuring, you know, getting a coach in here that can instill a mindset of what this team is. When they're on the ice, they're not a run and gun team. We're just not. We don't have the defensemen that can come back and compensate for that in transition. So we've got, you know, it's got to start defensively. I personally would like to see them, you know, go on a win streak where the score is 3-2, 2-1, 1-0, you know, just because you've got to bring back that defensive mentality that's going to help you in the long term. Because just rushing down the ice and breaking out of the zone and stretch passes and all those kinds of things and dump and chase is not going to work with this team. We've talked about it and you can still see it's not working.
So those are brilliant points. And, the Arizona game was 32 shots given up, 44 against,
Vegas.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, so real quick, Zach, Jones's famous line from his rant where the Flyers were not shut out, they shut themselves out. Mm-hmm, and okay. I thought that was a brilliant.
Yeah, commentary. No, it's very.
They
very
weren't.
True.
They weren't shut out. They never crossed the blue line. So there's a site called Natural Stat Trick. I don't know if you guys have ever checked it out. It talks about all the analytics, and I'm not Mr. Analytics, but you know, occasionally I'll check it out. And with the past two wins against Vegas and Arizona, a win is a win, but you're not going to win two games in a row and play brilliantly and flawlessly after the way you've played the past dozen games. So, of course, we're going to see some flaws. Now, they were outplayed, and if not for Hart, and thank goodness the power play, they lose that game. And it was funny. Natural Stat Trick has, I think, a stat called assume score. We should have lost the game 6-2, according to that analytics site. And the following game against Arizona, it was almost like a dead even game with shots on goal, and all the analytics were like their Corsi time in each other's zones was equal. The Flyers had the edge on high value chances. So, and the thing that upset me most about the Arizona game, and again, a win is a win, was how easy they entered our zone. It was like they just came from the neutral zone and entered our zone and started setting up shop rather easily, to Nick's point, causing our goalies to make great saves. So a win is a win, but they weren't the prettiest wins. So let's start with you, Zach, on those past two games.
We were definitely outplayed in Las Vegas. Carter Hart, I think I saw a stat when he saves more than 40, he's 6-0-0. You're like, well, I'd hope so. You know, a guy plays that well, you would hope that the team gives him a win for his effort. But I was shocked that how well he played. Like that was there's no such thing as vintage Carter Hart, but maybe one day we will talk about vintage Carter Hart, and it'll be a performance like that. It was astounding. The thing that bothered me the most about the Vegas game is that we were still just getting physically pushed around. Especially towards the end. Thank God the game ended it when it did, because I just had the feeling, and they almost did. They got within one. Had it gone another 5-6 minutes, there was no doubt that Vegas was going to put another one in, because they were just smacking boys around, and it was infuriating to watch.
Risto was a hitter that night, though.
Risto's
he played great.
He should be. Yeah, that's true.
No, but he hasn't really been the vicious hitter we expected most of the season. That game, he was.
He's been much improved the past two games.
I think he's been playing with an injury most of the year. Just a gut feeling. I just don't think he's been himself.
Perhaps, yeah. So that was, but yeah, like you said, a win is a win. We got away with it. Sometimes you need your goalie to play that well, and exactly. Sometimes you just get lucky. And then with the Arizona game, imagine if we had lost. That's sort of the reason I can't fully enjoy that win. Imagine if we had lost to a team that nearly didn't have an arena to play in a week ago. That would have been humiliating, absolutely humiliating. And last night, I'll admit, I actually took the last two periods off just because I wasn't gathering the sort of joy that you're supposed to get as a Flyers fan watching the game, because it was, like I said, one of those games like, oh, you just better win. And we ended up winning by two. We were absolutely gifted a goal by the Arizona goalkeeper. I can't remember his name. With a terrible, terrible giveaway.
Yeah, to Brown.
Yeah. And, you know, it was good to see. I think I was enjoying watching Ghost play more than anything else in the first period. It's funny how, like, you know, last year, absolutely get rid of Ghost. But then everybody misses him so much. That's been a huge 180 on people's opinions on him.
Well, the thing with Ghost is he appears to be healthy, but and Yandel was supposed to be the poor man's version of Ghost, salary wise. But Ghost looks fast on the ice right now. And Yandel, we discussed Yandel.
Yandel is about to have the most joyless record breaking season ever.
Yeah.
He's gonna
when is that streak? How much longer do we have to go, Dan?
18 more games.
How many? But I say this tongue in cheek, but then the second he breaks the record, do we bench him? Yes. All right, that's Zach Hinderchuk saying yes. Now, real fast before we transition. We've all talked about the joy of watching Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Nathan MacKinnon, Matthew Barzal type players. But I'm not going to lie to you. The most dominant game I've seen in a while by a player against the Flyers was Max Pacioretty. Mm-hmm. He was brilliant on the ice. Brilliant. So I just felt I had to call him out for.
Yeah,
for
he's his, a hell of a player.
I mean, he was just wonderful. He just stood out.
And I'm all about rooting for Jack Eichel. I'm a big fan of his. And that Vegas team will be fun to watch when he joins them.
They have to dump $10 million in salary somehow, though. Fine. But they'll probably get young assets in their system as a result.
Yeah.
Okay. The power play is looking better.
Yes.
Nick, you are the technical expert. What are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing exactly what we said we should be seeing. You know, they're starting to understand what works for them and what works for this skill set, you know, and part of the process with that is a clean, zone entry and working the perimeter and waiting, being a little bit more patient as you're cycling the puck and finding your opportunities, you know, with gaps and breakdowns in the defense, and then getting to the net. And, you know, obviously you can see that JVR is the prime guy in that whole equation there. Cause his front of the net presence is really what is getting them out of this power play slump. Obviously they realize it. There's, you know, they had to have been practicing it because it just doesn't happen by accident like that. So I don't know why we were in a situation where we were not, you know, kind of adhering to the process of what they should be doing when they weren't. And now they are, you know, because Yo is head coach. I don't know, but I hope they, you know, continue to move forward in understanding what they need to do process wise on the power play and what works for this team. And again, that is working the perimeter, being patient and finding the gaps and getting, you know, and getting pucks to the net, not from the point. You know, walking the puck in if you're a defenseman rather than taking the shot into somebody's shin guards. So, you know, and creating a little bit of, you know, activity where, you know, you're just, if you are shooting from more of a high slot area that you're blocking the vision of the goaltender and you can make some things happen with rebounds. So, you know, that's what's happening, that you're not, you know, that's how we are going to get out of this power play slump. And it was good to see over, you know, especially, you know, these last two games.
Mm-hmm. Well, that had to be the difference has to be that Yo dismissed the Therrien philosophy. And maybe when they were co-coaches, he didn't want to step on his toes, as it were. And maybe he's just, I'm drawing a blank. I don't even know. Laviolette is his assistant. Who's the other guy that's with him now?
I don't even know.
Yeah. So maybe the other guy.
Perrier for.
Yeah.
For
Radio, not Laviolette. I meant Le
Perrier. I know. Yeah.
The wrong, long French name. Le Perrier, I'm sorry, is one of his assistants.
I saw the name yesterday and I can't remember it.
Yeah. So maybe they're giving a good voice to the power play.
Well, maybe they're just lucky. You know, even a bad power play is going to put in a couple of goals. Like, do you think is JVR, as he's turned his season around, or is even a guy who's going to perform sometimes?
I hope he has, Zach. I really do. I think he's a guy that's deserved of some, you know, for what he's done for this organization over the long haul. And if, you know, his tenure here and his leadership can help this team, because, you know, scoring power play goals is how you win games. You can't go 0-for on the power play. You've got to come up with, you know, if you've got five power plays, you've got to come up with at least one goal. And possibly two. So now right now you're two goals because of a mistake that, you know, the opposing team made. And then, you know, another third or fourth goal in 5-on-5. So, you know, you've got to score goals on the power play. And if I really hope it, because I love JVR. He's a great guy. You know, we're friends from way back. And I would love to see him just kind of put his stamp on the season and be productive. He deserves it.
Well, I would like it. I'd like for his salary not to be an issue to discussed.
Yeah. I find him to be an enigma though. If you recall, I know we're going way back, that Stanley Cup run against the Blackhawks. He was so dynamic in the playoffs. I mean, he just was, he scored a ton of goals. He was flying around the ice. And then the next season happened and it's like he disappears. It's like, where's that JVR that was flying around the ice?
That's been the story of his career, I feel.
Right.
Like.
Yeah. And he was flying around the ice yesterday. Mm-hmm. Whereas previously it's like, where is he? It's like, so it is a story of his career. And somehow he scores 30, 40 goals when he was with Toronto at the very least. So it's like, he's almost like the Bobby Abreu of hockey. Are his stats really legit?
He's a really smart player. I mean, he scores goals by just knowing where to be too, you know,
right. And right.
We'll take those front of the net goals all day long, won't we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and he finally got the tip in goal that, you know, that he's probably the one of the best in front of the net. It just hasn't done it this year until recently.
Right.
All right. So on the opposite end of the spectrum is the PK becoming a concern prior to the last two games. Now the last two games, I think we were 7 out of 8 kills. So we did well, we were 1-for-6. I mean, we were 5 out of 6 against Vegas and a perfect 3-for-3 last night. And the previous games, we were terrible against in the penalty kill, and the penalty kill was at least our strength. Do we have any concerns with that, or the last two games maybe we're getting our penalty kill mojo back?
I don't find myself that worried about it.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously, even if you have a great penalty kill squad, and they don't have a great one, but it hasn't been a point of contention for this team. There's going to be games where you give up power play goals, and they did for a bit. So I don't know. I want to focus on the positives, even in games where we're or streaks where we're underperforming. And for me, the thing that I've been clinging to is one, Carter Hart, and then two, the penalty kill hasn't been that bad. So I'm gonna maintain that mindset right now that okay, the Flyers at least have a good penalty kill.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And to your Carter Hart point, and ultimately your Martin Jones point, it'll tie in. Jim Jackson has referenced that if the sloppy D continues, his fear is that the goalies are going to get so exposed that their confidence is going to collapse again. So hopefully that'll get tightened up. So we have to really pay attention to that over the next few games. As Nick referenced, getting the puck out of the zone, as I referenced, allowing teams easily to enter the zone, that needs to be tightened up. Now, we'll end our show discussing perhaps this time next week the three games that I have on the board. Now, if you go schedule-wise, this should be a sigh of relief. But again, these teams could have the sigh of relief feeling knowing that they're playing the Flyers. So we're home against the Devils, who have owned us. So hopefully we can build on these two games and finally beat that team. Montreal has lost 5 in a row and have only scored 4 goals in those 5 games.
I've never seen a team fall apart after a cup appearance right? So quickly.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
And then listen, I don't want to trumpet Ottawa by any means, but it's just ironic that I happened to watch most of the Ottawa Tampa Bay game the other day, and Ottawa looked far from a 6-win team.
Right.
I mean, they have some nice young talent. They have Josh Norris, Brady Tkachuk, Drake Batherson, and the 18th pick of the Connor McDavid draft, Thomas Chabot, is anchoring their defense and really is coming out of his shell this year. So they have nice young talent. Again, teams like the Devils and Ottawa, they have bad records because they're just young and naive. Mm-hmm. Whereas we have a bad record because we're just playing complete sloppy hockey. And hopefully we'll fix that. But I'm not confident yet that these two games have not instilled we're out of our funk yet in my soul. Where do you feel with, are we out of the funk yet? And are these games in theory all winnable? What are your thoughts, Zach?
I think the opponents they're mattering less and less to me.
Right.
Because even if they go 1-2, but you see that the effort is there, the fundamentals are there. You get sort of that Flyers feeling. Then I'm okay with that. So I don't think I care who they're playing anymore. I'm happier that they're playing teams with losing records for sure. But you know, if this week was Carolina, Florida, Tampa Bay, you know, we could go 0-3, but if the effort's there, then I'm okay with that. I think this is more about what the Flyers bring to the ice than who they're bringing it against.
Well,
I'm thrilled that we're playing Montreal, because man, that team is in a free fall.
No, I get your point, though, but if you just said if they go 0-3, but they played a good brand of hockey, then you must be in, this is a rebuild mode year, whereas I believe some Flyers fans are holding hope for some kind of a run to get back into the playoff hunt.
Well, a playoff run, I think, is certainly possible, but beyond, really, how far do you think this team is going to go?
No, it's
I know that's not directed to me.
Yeah, but
we're stuck in sort of a weird purgatory. I suppose I think this team has the ability certainly to get into the playoffs. And here's the thing: is that I want them to do exceptionally well. I will never root against them. I hate that. I don't want them to tank ever. Yeah. I hate that philosophy. I hate that the way that that's encroached into sport, tanking for draft picks and everything like that. So of course I want them just to smoke everybody, But more importantly for me right now, because that's just not realistic, they're not going to do that, is that I would like to see a spark every game. I would like to see some of the moments we saw earlier in the season, the Nick Seeler scream type moments, which were a lot of fun to watch. If I get that out of this Flyers team, you know, I think that that'll be satisfying. It's not always the losses that bother me so much, because I think the Flyers have played okay in a couple of their losses this year. It's when it's just humiliating, which led to the bag movement, which is, you know, I think probably the biggest Flyers story of the week. It wasn't that this team was playing poorly, it's that they weren't even showing up. And if they don't want to show up, then if the fans are going to show up, they're certainly not going to show their faces.
Well, with this week, if one thing that is going to feed into the other, if they play a very good brand of hockey and they come out and they play the system that is conducive to the way they're going to produce and defend, they are going to win. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be you come out and play a good brand of hockey, you have good goaltending, and you lose against the Devils, the Canadiens, and the Senators. So, yeah, I mean, to me, you've got two must-win games. The home games are must-wins for me. If they come out and play well and, you know, they take advantage of their power play opportunities and they get good goaltending, they need to beat the Devils and the Senators. You know, I could see the Canadians being a letdown game for them, having to travel up there and then being on that skid. Would we like to see a 3-0 week? Of course, we all would. But I agree with you, Zach. I mean, they need to play a good brand of hockey. They need to come out here this week with energy, with jump, with patience, and understanding what they need to do to kind of wait for their opportunities rather than force them all the time. And I think if that happens, we'll have a good productive week.
Adam, thank you for checking in. As always, Adam is predicting 2 out of 3. No, Zach, I love you, but Nick's answer is what I was looking for. If they play the kind of hockey that we want them to play, they have to do well against these opponents. That was the answer. I was like, no, I'm just kidding. But
we rehearsed that, really.
That was a good, that was a beautiful answer. Drop your mic, disconnect it, and drop it. So the good news is they played Saturday, so you get 2 days off, and hopefully they can further instill whatever Yo's system or philosophy is with practice and film work. You guys know how important that is to get time off and go over your system, especially when it's done so quickly and on a fly.
And keep having fun when they're playing, which hopefully that keeps going. You know, and let's face it, you play better when you're having fun and you don't have a weight on your shoulders.
Let's face it, in the last two games, does not Coots, JVR, G, and TK look like different players right now?
Oh, certainly.
They're smiling, or you know, they're out there just kind of. Yeah, they do. They look like different players. It's great.
The pep and the step hopefully will lead to enthused practices. Listen, I would imagine, Zach, you would know more than us. I would imagine when you're in a losing streak, practices are like humdrum. And when you're winning, there's probably like, you know, just joking around, you know, not to a point where you're disrespecting a practice, but just enjoyment of practice. And I'm hoping that these next 2 days, they'll have some enjoyment of practice as they learn the system that Yo wants to put in place.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to be out there smiling a lot more when you're up on the scoreboard. I don't know. I get a little frustrated though, that they get into those doldrums and don't practice as hard and aren't having as much fun.
Thank you, Adam. Know.
That's it's a lack of kind of a lack of leadership there.
It is
that, that is, you know, I mean, when I talk to some of the older guys, they're very upset about the lack of leadership that this Flyers team, I think, has right now. It's when you have those games. It's all great to go into a post-game press conference and say, this is on us. I accept responsibility. But, you know, it's the things that we don't see as fans that become really, really important. And if those practices really do start becoming, well, we're just getting this done. You know, we're going to be on the ice for 3 hours and then we get to go home. I don't know. It doesn't really sit all that well with me. I think those are the times when you see what your team is really made of. So, you know, I love it when the Flyers are clearly out there having a good time. But when they're not, because of what's happening on the scoreboard, that's when I'm more interested a lot of times in watching to see how they're reacting. Okay, well, let's do something about this. Let's not just get down on ourselves. Let's turn this thing around. And that happens both during the games, in the locker rooms, and at practice.
Well, my intention was to wrap up the show, but you just triggered something in me that I have to address and ask. And there's two, I guess, contradictory points to this. I believe it's the Broadway Hat, a very good podcast out of New York, interviewed Dale Weiss. And we heard this last year, but it was a recent interview on December 7th. And he basically annihilated the leadership and the culture in the Flyers locker room. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people were back, you know, were firing back on Twitter that he's just a bitter player. Bleep Dale Weiss. I'm always the guy that's somewhere in the middle. You know, yeah, he was a bitter player. He felt like his role was, he wasn't being utilized and all that. But there must be some truth to that, right? Because he said, the teams he referenced playing for was a totally different culture. Then I'll bring up to Nick, because Zach, we had a guest on who I won't mention his name because he kind of wants to stay out of it as far as the inside information. He said during the Hackstall years, the only reason the team played hard is because they played for G. They love G. So now I'm conflicted. Mm-hmm. They love G. They played for G. But we're hearing they haven't done anything in 10 years with G. So I just respect the player's game. I cannot speak to his leadership in the locker room. So hearing what I just said regarding Dale Weiss's comments, the comment of the person that we had as a guest who definitely is in the know, where do you really stand on G as a leader?
I'm for him. I am. I think he's got that personality where he can pick a guy up when he's down. I don't know. I mean, it's really, that's a hard question to answer because you're really just not in the room where it's just private. But when you get a leak like that with Dale Weiss, and again, you take it for what it's worth. I mean, he's an ex-player, so there could be some bitterness that is leading to those kinds of comments. But correct, typically where there's smoke, there's fire. So there might have been, you know, maybe there were some issues in the locker room at some point here and there. You know, the hardest thing about being a leader is being consistent with your message. It's got to be game in and game out, whether you win or lose. So, you know, I don't know if G brings that aspect of leadership to the locker room. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think with his veteran presence and him being in the league as long as he has been in the league and maturing more and more, as the years go on, I think it's going to be essential for him to be, the voice of the locker room. So I lean towards, yeah, he's a good leader.
How about you, Zach? You just referenced the old school players that you've talked to. I know you must have more insight than we do. What's your thoughts?
Drew is one of the greatest Flyers of all time.
I agree.
Say that.
I agree.
You can't not say that. He's had a phenomenal career.
Completely agree.
I wish he weren't captain. Yeah, I'd rather. Actually, at this point, both out of deference to him, I think I would love to see him somewhere else. I think that they need to move on. If they're going to kind of move on from the failures of recent teams, they need to move on from the Claude Giroux era. And Claude Giroux is not going to win a Stanley Cup in Philadelphia. And I would like, he's thrilled me enough times with spectacular play that I think he deserves that opportunity. But I'm hearing more of the Weiss comments for sure, that he's not the leader that this team needs.
Right. And I believe this is our buddy Vance. The Flyers just aren't good enough. You can't get blood from a stone. I agree, but Weiss's comments were they had talent and they were underperforming. So again, bitter player or guy in the know.
Yeah.
Perhaps somewhere in between. It's just a question I want to throw out there. I've never been a Drew basher. I've always appreciated what he's done when he's healthy, and you could tell when he was playing with those abdominal strains, and that he's the best player on the ice when he's healthy. So you just can't deny that. But again, I can't speak to what goes in goes on in the locker room. I just can't. I'm not around. You're not around. So, but I understand all our points are valid. So is Vance's point. The team right now just isn't good enough. So
this they're better than this, though.
I mean, does it fall on the captain? Is it the coaching or the captain? You mentioned Vigneault lost respect in the locker room. You had inside information, so that speaks to coaching.
Sure.
And maybe what held them together was G. Who knows? Maybe they would have been completely a disaster if not for him. So I'm just speculating. Excuse me, but it is a quandary. You know, when you don't win, and again, we haven't won a Stanley Cup in 46 years. So why is G the only captain that wasn't a good captain? Right?
Well, because there were some pretty great teams that didn't win Stanley Cup. I mean, you can have an excellent run.
No, I know, like Keenan's kids did. Pullen got there with broken ribs twice and took them to 7 games. I get it. But I'm saying it's I hate to dump on G, but I understand people's arguments. But the argument that he sucks. He doesn't suck as a player. You can't say that, people. You can't say that. You might not like him as a leader or as a captain, but he's a damn good player.
One of the things about keeping him around is, I don't know who you give the C to at this point. There's no one who's like, for a while I thought it was Couturier, but I can't believe he was one guy I thought, well, his play's not going to be an issue this year, but he hasn't felt like the heir apparent. No. If Giroux does end up going somewhere else, I think I have no, like, I can't say for certain this is the next guy that should absolutely be the captain of this team. I don't know who that player would be.
Now, real fast. Now, if that, let's hypothetically say that was the case. Do most teams do anonymous vote and say this is who our captain is, or the coach say this is our next captain? I believe that the players should do an anonymous vote for who the next captain should be, and that's my does it go both ways in the league?
Yeah, it happens both. I think it's kind of a mix of both inputs, kind of, okay. You know, there's fan voting, and then there's kind of the way they pick, like, the all-star teams and everything like that. I know when my dad got picked captain, it was the team that picked him.
Well, that's great, because that at least tells you who the team believes should be the next captain. So
right.
For what it's worth. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for waking up with Flyer and Ice this morning. I hope we brought you some good insight on our thoughts on the coaches, on our breakdown of the games this week. It's always a thrill to have – he's over there. It's always a thrill to have Zach join our show. Nick the Scout. I'm Dan Green. We are Flyers and Ice. Flyer and Ice, brought to you by the Heat Ratio Sports Network. Not sure what we'll be doing this Wednesday, but I know for sure we'll do Waking Up with Flyer and Ice next Sunday, addressing the 3 games that are coming up, the Devils, the Canadiens, and the Ottawa Senators. Until then, enjoy your hockey, and please be safe, everyone.
Let's go Flyers.
Take care.